Father, we are grateful again for your provision in our lives. We thank you for the opportunity to get to know others struggling with similar issues, making similar plans, and being called to similar works. Father, we ask that you would now help us understand how we might work together better to the furthering of your kingdom and the glory of your name. And we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. This is called the introduction to ACCS. And it was fairly late in the planning for the conference, but I became aware that I was to do this. In fact, the outline on page 29 was prepared with approximately 24 hours notice. So it was hurriedly put together, and hopefully will be filled in with your pencils in more detail. Just as a way of defining some things, establishing the grammar, so to speak, of ACCS, I suppose the best place to start is to tell you what ACCS stands for. It is the Association of Classical and Christian Schools, Incorporated. It is incorporated under the laws of the state of Idaho, is fast becoming an organization that can accept charitable contributions. In IRS code terms, that's a 501c3 corporation. We hope that it will very quickly take on some charitable donations. It consists, or will consist of, when fully stabilized, of member schools, as well as a board from member schools, no more than two board members from any particular school, consistent with the way Logos has set up their board. It will have permanent board members and elected board members. There will be seven permanent board members, six serving at any one time. So a permanent board member will have 1 year off in seven. And then four elected board members from the membership. They will initially also be appointed, and then after the first cycle will be elected. Those four elected board members will serve four-year terms, with the expiration of the terms being 1 year, staggered on a one-year basis. There are a number of membership types. Let me review those for you. Of course, as many of you may know, there is a charter membership for schools. That is, as they say in marketing terms, for a limited time only. The charter membership will close December 31st of this year. So if you're affiliated with a school or plan to start a school that would like to be able to say that it's a charter member school, this is the time to do it. The charter membership is also a fully paid member. It's a one-time fee of $500 with no annual dues, and that was done in an effort to bring some initial capital into the organization to help fund some of the things that it needed to do. There are also full memberships for schools that are not charter members but wish to be members in every respect. And then an associate membership, which covers well, there are two different types of memberships that are closely related, an associate membership and a household membership, so that homeschoolers as well as related organizations can be a part of. and then a college membership. The membership dues for a full membership for the 95-96 year, they run from July to June, consistent with the fiscal year of the association, are $75 a year. The associate and household membership, I believe, is $25, and the college membership, I believe, is $50. We're the Geneva School, of which I'm a part, is a charter member school. However, we have approved a budget that will continue to give money to the association. And I hope you'll consider that, too, if you're a charter member school. It's not out of an obligation based on contracts, but rather out of a need by the association. I think you'll become aware as we go of some of those needs. The purposes of the association are also a matter of grammar and necessary for understanding, so let me just read that right out of our bylaws. The ACCS is organized for the mission of promoting, establishing, and equipping member schools committed to a classical approach to education in the light of a Christian worldview grounded in the Old and New Testaments, the Bible. This mission shall be accomplished through national and regional conferences, publication and distribution of books, bulletins, and newsletters, consulting, accreditation, and any other necessary, proper, and lawful means. Last phrase is obviously a catch-all. We very quickly intend to hire an executive director, someone that can actually be responsible for the day-to-day operations of the association. It's the goal that that person be in place, the goal, everyone knows what goals are. They hopefully get met, sometimes they don't. But the goal is to have that person in place by January of 96. In setting out how to get to that point, there are a number of thresholds that need to be accomplished, some of which are not insignificant. So whether or not we reach that goal remains to be seen, but that is a goal. Now, obviously, you're here from all over the country. It's been exciting to get to know many of you and see people that we've seen in other settings and talked to over the telephone. We are obviously involved in a national effort. We're trying desperately to educate our children. You're trying to educate your children and the children of your community in a way that would glorify God. And I want to digress for just a moment and talk a little bit about how I see the ACCS having come together. We're all familiar with Recovering the Lost Tools of Learning. Our situation in Orlando was such that I have four little boys. A couple of years ago, the oldest one was in first grade. The second oldest was in kindergarten, and we were happily minding our own business, sending them to a local prep school and thinking that they were getting a value-neutral but very good education, and became aware of some not-so-value-neutral issues the school wished to teach to our children, and that began the process of asking some questions. In an effort to kind of help think through those issues, I called R.C. Sproul, someone that you may be familiar with, a writer of books and theologian. And his comment was telling. I know Wallace is from Florida. Are there any other Floridians here? I don't want to insult too many people. So Wallace, you've heard this before, so you won't be surprised by it. R.C.'s comment was a baiting comment, and our relationship was such that I would expect that of him. And he said something like, well, if you think you're going to get a good education for your kids in Florida, forget it. The thing you need to hope for is getting them the least bad education that you can. I said, okay, where does one get a good education? And he said, I've got a book you need to read. and it was Recovering the Lost Tools of Learning, a book that his staff at Ligonier had read for educational theory purposes. Well, as it turned out, I was traveling back and forth to South Florida each week because of some business commitments there, and I knew RC's schedule included teaching seminary at Reformed Theological Seminary on Monday evenings, and that evening I needed to go back to South Florida, so before going, Laurie and I ran over to the seminary, timing our arrival there for his break, and he told us that he had sent the book to us in the mail, and so I was going to leave town without it. I should have known how dangerous that was, but I didn't think much of it. The book arrived the next morning, or with the mail the next day, and my wife was very quickly captivated by it, stayed up all night, and the next morning, excuse me, as early as she felt comfortable calling, which happened to be 6, called. Now I'm staying at her parents' place in Miami, and I got on the phone, and she said, honey, we need to start a school. Yeah, right. I said, more wisely than typical, okay, I'll read the book and then we'll talk. Got off the phone and told her mother what I thought of her daughter. Well, I read the book, and we became very excited about the possibilities together. Called together, well, first we called RC back and said, you got us into this, you're in too. And a couple weeks later, thank you. A couple weeks later, we, now if I can keep from bumping the podium. A couple weeks later, we had a group together and spent about 10 minutes talking about whether or not to start a school, and the rest of the evening, how. One of the things that was a very, very helpful part of making that decision was having had the opportunity to talk, particularly to Doug, and just hear him say, you can do it. And if there's one thing that I think we need to keep in mind that ACCS will be, it's an organization of encouragement, one that we will always be able to say to others, maybe those others are you right now, saying, you can do it. I didn't have any educational training. I didn't have a very good, in a broad sense, education. I don't know if this is bragging or complaining, but I have frequently said that I have never met anyone that's had a more significant differential between their math SAT scores and their verbal SAT scores, and the SAT was not the higher. Verbal was not the higher. I did not get the kind of education that I want my children to get. And based on the response at a seminar or workshop yesterday, it was very clear that very few of us, if any, have. We're talking about forging ground that has been grown over with very thick weeds, trees, you name it, and it needs to be pioneered again. I've said before that the recovery of the lost tools of education is not like Mel Gibson, who found the Atocha? Gibson, guy, he's from Key West. He went out and found a treasure after a treasure ship that had been buried. It's not like going and finding the mother lode. We're talking about things having been spread out over many geographic areas for many years, and it's going to be a long, tedious process to do what we're doing. Now, I've taken a lot of time with an illustration to make really one point, but a very, very big one. We really do need each other. The Association of Classical and Christian Schools is intended to be a support mechanism so that we can work together using each other's resources learning from each other's successes and failures. It probably will not come as any surprise to you that Tom Garfield, Tom Spencer, and Doug Wilson can't respond to each and every one of us individually forever with all of our needs. And we very quickly need to develop a support mechanism. Well, how do we do that is also a relevant question. We don't know. We don't know all of how we do that. The board committed to having its future non-annual meetings via internet. A novel idea. Seems like a thing to do in the 90s. But it's a way to inexpensively to communicate with each other in real time. I think that's probably a good idea for us to be thinking in terms of how we might share information. Just like yesterday, hearing about Shirley Grammer, that's something that was discovered, is a wonderful resource. There are resources in everyone's backyard that the rest of the country needs to know about, and ACCS is a way to do that, and maybe the internet's the way to get it out in the street for everyone else to know about it. But we want to be able to be supportive of each other. Another answer to how we do it is by having a central clearinghouse, so to speak, in a person, the executive director. Now, I don't know if you have had a chance to meet Jared's mother, Trish, but she's the secretary for the association, and she has done a remarkable job and is doing far more than she's being paid to do, but it's getting to be a burdensome thing for her, and so we're anxious to get an executive director to do the job, and it appears that there's enough work already to go straight to a full-time person. How are we going to pay for that? That gets back to hopefully you charter member schools will help by providing some form of gift on an annual basis. I don't want this to come across as a fundraising talk, but I would be remiss in not telling you that one of the commitments that or one of the hurdles that we've committed ourselves to is raising a significant amount of money, $25,000, by September 1st toward funding salaries, particularly for an executive director and his assistant. The home office is here, will likely continue to be here, so that person will likely be housed here in Moscow. And we need to put that together. Suffice it to say, if you have any ideas, sources, or more money than you need, consider the association as a worthy recipient. Now, we need to also focus a little bit on what the benefits of membership are. We've talked about one, as you've understood how and why what we're doing, but let me add some additional things. We talked about curriculum development. Logos has probably, for most of you, been the only or the primary source of curricular information. The idea of sharing resources is far broader than that, and we'll very quickly find the things that you have in your backyard are meaningful to many other people. If you're like we are in Orlando, you might be a little bit bashful about sharing what you've discovered. Not because you want to keep it to yourself, but because this whole thing is new to you, and you might be a little bit insecure about whether or not it's the right stuff. Don't be. Let's look at it together. Let's deal with it. Let's evaluate it. If it is something that is accomplishing your mission, I'm sure that there are many others that would like to know about it. So sharing resources, I would like to see develop into one of the significant benefits of being a part of ACCS. We had a software company approach us in Orlando because someone that visited the school knew about the software that we were getting ready to use, and the school that they were a part of, which was much bigger than ours, not a Christian classical school, but another Christian school in Pennsylvania, had outgrown that software and suggested a package that we might consider. Well, maybe, and that particular company made a proposal to us for all ACCS members so as to receive some group buying discounts. We haven't pursued that very far as ACCS goes, but those are the kinds of things that we can learn very quickly from each other. It might be that kind of software and maybe a commonality of use of software will create some interesting sharing opportunities, ways to analyze how what we're doing compares to how you're doing. And if we can do that, we can possibly shore up our weaknesses or help you shore up your weaknesses. So there are a lot of things that we can brainstorm and work on. We've talked in terms of teacher training quite a bit. I don't know, has the survey results or the results of the survey been made available? I think it was on the back table. Most of you get a chance to pick it up. As you can see, there's a tremendous request for teacher and staff training, and that on a regional basis. There's a tremendous request, and the board is prepared to honor it for making the national conference more accessible. Doug mentioned that he believes that 90% of the schools that seem to be getting started are east of the Rockies. That's a significant thing. So the board is very sensitive to trying to do the best job possible to meet the needs of the members. And one of those is to keep the costs down. I know, just as you do, particularly if you came from the east, how expensive it is to come here for a few days and to bring people from your school. But the more we can do about that, the better off we all are. And regionalization is an important part of that, and being able to go to the membership is an important part of that. As far as teacher training goes, this conference has been here now 3 years. It's had a chance to work out some of the kinks and smooth things out, and that's a desire of the board as far as teacher training goes as well. Run one here and then look at how it went, what the strengths and weaknesses were. Is a week long enough? Is there a way to do it better, and those kinds of things. So, at least for this year, the only teacher training is going to be here. But after that, who knows? Well, I like the idea of having one in the East. I enjoy coming to Moscow, but I also like being near home. And doing those kinds of things so that more people can come, more people can be involved, is a critical part of what we want to do. It was also from the survey very evident that CLASSIS, the periodic newsletter, was a valuable way of communicating information. Lead articles, sharing of information from one school to another, establishing a classified section for needs and that sort of thing. And our plan is to increase the frequency of that from approximately quarterly to 6 times a year. We'll see how that goes. Maybe it'll end up being a monthly periodical. Probably not before an executive director's in place, for obvious reason, but to increase the ability to communicate with membership. So that is another benefit of membership. And if you've got information to share with it, get it in to Doug, who's acting as editor. There are so many of us that are in this together and in this very early that sometimes we don't know if what we have to share is worthwhile. Let him be the judge of that. But let's share what we do think is valuable and try and take some initiative there. I kind of liken it to being in a church that's growing real fast, and you might have missed a week or two, and you're afraid to go up to somebody that you don't recognize for fear of them having been there for a few months and you didn't notice them before, and so you get labeled as an unfriendly church because you're afraid of embarrassing yourself for having said something that you should have known. Let's make sure that we take initiative to communicate, because we really are all in this together. I've seen a lot of faces now, having come here for 3 years each year, and I've also seen a lot of new faces. But one thing I know for sure is there aren't many people that have been doing this for a very long time, and we really need to realize the significance of that. Let's talk a little bit about the kind of dreams that we can have at ACCS, and then I want to open it up for discussion. I heard some very, very valuable comments and suggestions yesterday from some of you, and I'm sure there are a lot of them, so let's get them on the record today. But first, let me give you some fodder for thinking. I like the idea of ACCS establishing its own, at least for its distinctive areas, standardized tests. The SATs are pretty good. It's nice to be able to see how you compare to the rest of the world, or how you compare to ACSI member schools. But we don't teach some of the things that they're testing on. I mean, and we don't plan to teach that. Why should we want to subject our kids to being tested on those kinds of things? Well, that's obvious. However, it is a monumental task to replace the SATs entirely. So maybe what we'll do is, and the kids are the ones that have the problem here, subject them to the SATs and an ACCS test that would test on some of our distinctives. Test them on the Latin. Test them on logic. And as our schools get a little older, some of you are at this point already, test them on rhetoric. And maybe test on some other distinctives that might come out of Bible or theology classes and that sort of thing. But let's establish some accountability to ourselves with some standardized testing. I think that's a wonderful idea. It is not one of the highest priorities at this point. We aren't entirely weaned yet and need to realize that that's not necessarily a first item. If your school is anything like ours in Orlando, you've heard this question. Are you accredited? Well, no, we're not. Well, can my kid get into college? Well, now we get into a long explanation that includes this school 3,000 miles away here that says, well, they wrote 20 different colleges and found out that for the most part, there was no problem at all. And furthermore, they're now graduating students that are going to good schools and having no problem. And then get on into specific examples of that and trying to allay those fears. Well, that's kind of a backpedaling way of answering the question. I think from a very simple standpoint, the answer would be best to be able to say, yes, we are accredited. We're accredited by an organization that we respect and willingly recognize as a peer organization that we want to submit ourselves to. That's a fairly high priority for us, and I believe it's September 1 that we set as a date to have an initial draft for board review of what that might look like. So that's on a high priority track at this point. We'll see what the first draft looks like to see how quickly we might be able to do something like that. We obviously can't accredit a school that hasn't met. We can't accredit a school that's real new. But there's a big difference between saying we're not accredited and hope to be someday, and saying we're not accredited but we are a candidate for accreditation that we can only realize by the structure of the organization in this time frame. Then the simple analysis is probably for the person that answers the question, assuming it's a parent, well, that's before my kid graduates. Satisfactory answer, that one's put to bed. What other questions do you have? Accreditation has more value to it, though, than just for marketing purposes. I think, and I mentioned this earlier, that accreditation is a good way for us individually in our own towns, with our own schools, to be held accountable to some things that we've started out with. What it looks like, and they'll hear answers to questions, why Latin, why logic? Well, in this context, one of the parents asked the question, do you think that you can keep your vision intact? And the honest answer very quickly was no. Why should we think that we can do something that no one else has ever done? Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that we expect to lose it in 6 months, 5 years, or 10 years, and let's do everything possible to make our vision persevere. Well, that's one of the reasons for things like permanent board members, which is a bit of a misnomer. Obviously, none of us are permanently placed here, but it does create some significant continuity. That's one of the reasons for policy manuals that act as constitutions and curriculum guides and ways to measure against that. I think also that being part of the association will also create that kind of accountability and continuity also. And hopefully, when we say no, we won't be able to keep our vision. We're talking about hundreds of years, not fives or tens of years. I mentioned before the idea of sharing curricular information. It's been a flattering thing, and I wasn't planning on saying this, but I'm going to. Mike Leitman, our academic dean, was the one that found the Shirley Method, and it was kind of neat to see Logos, even though they didn't admit it publicly. Did you hear that, Tom? to actually adopt something that we found. That's going to happen from all of us. We're going to run into things. Now, I don't want to. I don't want you to get the wrong impression. It was actually John Saxon from Saxon Math that told us about it. It just happened to be we were talking to him about his math curriculum. He said, "Have you become familiar with this, which is done similarly, also?" So, we all, as we get in our own backyards, are going to find things. We're going to stumble across them, Please, please, actively make others aware of them so that we can all grow from this and be working cooperatively. We've talked a lot about sharing resources. If there's one question that I hear from every school that I talk to, it's, where do you get your teachers? How do you train your teachers? Well, when we talk about sharing resources, we got a line we're going to draw. We're not going to share our teachers, but we might share how we get them. And, of course, we want to share how to prepare people to teach. We're going to all learn a lot about that over the next couple of years, and I really hope that that will be something that we will actively share and develop for the sake of all of us. And then one final comment, again, a comment that I made, is just the idea of mutual encouragement. Now, I don't know a lot about any of your particular communities, but I know a lot about the one that I live in. And Tom Spencer touched on this in the talk that he gave just before lunch. The church, now I'm speaking not on behalf of ACCS, I'm speaking personally, and I want to make that clear. The church, I believe, is in very bad shape. It was probably a year ago, as part of being involved in this school, that I almost despaired our generation. And what I mean by that was, I wondered if it was worth the effort, but rather to focus all the effort on the kids. I don't know of many churches that recognize the pillars of the church that Calvin listed, particularly church discipline and its proper administration. And if you follow the necessary path in making your school what it ought to be, I'm convinced that that issue will be one that you will bump into. We did this past year. We didn't have everything in place, like a policy manual, in order to most effectively deal with some of those issues. Specifically, we had a tremendous problem with gossip among parents, a lack of dealing with things according to Scripture, particularly Matthew 18. We dealt with those issues courageously. And what happened was some of those people left the school, and that's fine. Some of them, however, just like the child who didn't like the answer they got from one parent, went to another parent, the church, in an effort to get their way. Now, I'm not going to suggest for a moment that we might have been blameless in all of what we did or in that process. But I'm convinced that the administration handled things in a biblical way. Whether the church that happens to be involved will or not still remains to be seen. I'm concerned about that. That has significant ramifications. I hope that ACCS will be an organization for you, as it has been for us in dealing with that kind of an issue, of being able to gain strength from the support and knowing the truth about what God would have us do in those kinds of things. And I'm hopeful that, and I don't want to exaggerate what participation in ACCS might, but I'm hopeful that those kinds of things may also even strengthen the churches that we're a part of, particularly as we have opportunity to. Now, I've covered a lot of different things, a smattering that was intentional, and I'd like to open up now for discussion. We have about 15 minutes of some ideas that you might have that may not have been mentioned here or may not have even been thought of that we ought to be considering and pursuing. I can tell you that anything that's mentioned now will be discussed and will be given consideration for prioritization on when and how it might be implemented, if it seems like something that ought to be. Yes?
How about membership meetings, like a meeting of the members of the ACCS?
It is, the bylaws expect that will happen annually as part of the national conference. It has not been done this year. Probably should have been, and for that, I should probably be the one to take the blame. There are a number of things that we just didn't accomplish over the course of the year that we planned to do since our meeting last year, which is really was a fledgling beginning, and we had goals and ideas, and we didn't meet all the goals, and I think that was one of them. It is a plan, though, to have an annual meeting. Of course, that's where elections would occur, and that's a regular source of idea sharing. I could see also, as we become, if we aren't already, I'm not and must quickly become familiar with things like the Internet, maybe a way to have regularly scheduled online meetings, monthly, who knows what. Pretty easy to do when you don't have to leave home. And announcing them is a simple thing to do, using Classes as a tool for doing that. So I could see that as a wonderful way of holding regular meetings for the interactive sharing of information, and hopefully that could be done easily. It'd be very difficult to do it otherwise, to do it in person other than annually. Yes, in the back.
I was said yesterday in an administrative meeting that we were semi-quasi classical school. And part of that for me is we certainly appreciate the spirit and the overall philosophy of what we've gleaned here over the last couple of days. I am concerned, though, that in some of those very specific issues of what you folks are calling a classical school, that there may be room for some philosophical differences, minor ones, I would say. And I'm concerned that the association may be becoming too narrow in areas that it doesn't need to be. And I'll just give a couple of specific.
Yeah, be specific.
What I got from information maybe a year ago, so it may have changed by now, that a school to be a member would have to be a K-12 school. We personally have some philosophical problems with kindergarten. I don't want to offend any kindergarten teachers, but I think it's an issue that's a legitimate one, you know, to talk about. There might be some questions about whether Latin has to start in third grade. And you know, some curricula issues,
okay.
School organization issues. If we don't think we only go into eighth grade, for instance, on purpose, and are really thinking about the necessity for a high school, but as a separate entity, is there some room for grammar schools like ourselves, who in spirit and in practice are emphasizing the classical education up to the two-thirds point, but are not, quote-unquote, a full-trained school?
Okay. For the sake of those back home, I'm going to repeat your question and make sure I state it as you intended. My understanding is you're concerned about some of the limitations for ACCS membership, particularly for full membership in ACCS, because of some distinctives and particulars that you may be committed to. One of them is kindergarten, one of them is going the whole way through 12th grade, one of them is when Latin starts and that sort of thing.
And there may be any number of issues.
Okay.
My reference point is more the Association of Christian Schools International, and we have been a member of them on and off, mainly over philosophical differences. And they do seem, though, to their credit, to have a wider umbrella that allows people to access all manner of very good resources and sources of encouragement and so on. And I'm just, you know, concerned.
Right. Well, I believe. I'm going to step out of my role as a board member for just a moment, and because I can't speak with the authority of the board on some of the questions that you've asked. But I believe that the kindergarten through 12th grade statement is one that is more geared towards going through 12th grade than it is beginning at kindergarten. Okay? I don't think, let me put it this way, unless persuaded otherwise from information that I can't think of now, that I would personally object to a school that didn't have a kindergarten. Okay, that's the one end. Now, on the other end, we're talking about full membership in an organization that has a commitment to a method called the Trivium. Okay, if a school says, we're going to be first grade through eighth grade, one of the questions, in fact, this is the way I answer the question, we're going to be kindergarten through eighth grade next year, we're adding a grade a year. And the question that we get is, sometimes it jumps a question or two and just asks, where do the kids go after 8th grade? Well, we say we're going to add a grade a year until we get through 12th grade. And then I go on to say, because if we didn't, it would be a little bit like pulling a car off the assembly line before it was finished. Now, if there's a place for them to go to finish that process, in other words, if they start in Detroit and end up in Cleveland to put the motor in it, okay, that's a little different. Now, I don't know how the board collectively would respond to that, but I do think it's a significant and important thing to think in terms of a completion of a process. And I've been around enough to know that if you stop at the dialectic stage, not only have you stopped mid-term, but you've stopped at a dangerous point. I can't think of anything worse for my children than taking them through the dialectic and teaching them how to argue and argue well without building that rhetoric or that ability or that understanding of the ethics of arguing, which is another ingredient. So that, I'm speaking personally now. As far as Latin goes, starting in third grade, I don't think there's anything that would restrict that at all. It is a commitment to a classical language, Sanskrit's excluded, but it's not Latin necessarily. Hebrew or Greek would clearly qualify. And I don't think it's a commitment, I don't think there's anything written that says a commitment to that beginning in third grade. I could look over, I don't have an application here. I think the application would be the best place to look at that, and it would take a bit long for now for me to look through the bylaws for us to discuss that more specifically.
And one of the things that Tom and I came here looking for, and we can see that it's not ready yet, is our school every other year goes to an association, American Association of Christian Schools, Bob Jones type academic and fine arts competition in South Carolina, Bob Jones University. Those folks are obviously not where we are theologically or philosophically, and so we would love to see someday that sort of thing being reproduced.
Competitions among schools at different in different categories. I think that would be wonderful. Mathematically, several at different levels. That is one of the debate teams. Absolutely, all kinds of ways to compete for iron sharpening iron is a wonderful way for us to put to the test those things that we're incubating, if you will.
Even some guidelines along those lines for intramural kinds of competitions. In other words, that it may be expensive for our seventh graders to go to a debate contest in Idaho. But even if there were sort of some general guidelines on here's what we're trying in different schools, here's what's working, maybe there is a national competition, but not everybody can afford to go there.
Who knows? Maybe the internet, maybe the national competition is done on the internet.
I think having used the internet quite a bit, the rhetoric component may be a little bit lacking.
I also think it'd be difficult for our string quartets to participate in polling.
Have you seen some of the creative signs that they use? Yeah, I agree. And obviously there are monetary limitations. At 3:30, we're going to get together and talk as regions. It's a whole lot easier to go to Kansas City than it is to Moscow for someone in Topeka. Just as in Orlando, it's a whole lot easier to go to Jacksonville or Jacksonville to Orlando than it is to go to Moscow. And there's nothing that says that it must be national. In fact, that would be a wonderful thing, I think, to be thinking in terms of very shortly to do on a regional basis, as regions have enough critical mass to make it a worthwhile endeavor. That's an excellent idea.
Just a quick follow-up. You'd be interested in anyone that had that desire to give some leadership of that and come to the board and say, I'm interested in framing how that might work.
I would. Yeah. I think that's a great idea. Personally, I have always been a competitor. I understand that competition breeds good things and bad things. But competition in and of itself is not bad because bad things come out of it. And I think that competition ought to be a good thing and ought to be done as much as possible because I believe it's a biblical thing to have iron sharpening iron and love the idea. And since you're in the Southeast region and they're talking like you'd like to do it, I'm interested in really talking in about 15 minutes. Hold on just a second. Over here, you were next,
yes.
I think.
I want to ask you something about accreditation, but I'd also like to encourage brand new schools that even though philosophically ACSI is not going to be where you are, they have all the speech, all the art fairs, all the science fairs, all the orchestra competitions,
yes.
And you have a network you can work with while ACCS gets big enough.
Yes. Yeah, that's another thing. ACSI does provide some of those competitions already, and it pleased me tremendously to see our little red shirts going to the front of the class mm-hmm. to get awards in the math competition that we participated in ACSI in Orlando this past year. And it's a real good way to do, I mean, that, in other words, competition is an opportunity that exists for us already through ACSI.
Okay, I wanted to ask that a second, because this is a really issue for my school. We just started second year of past year. When do you think that you would be able to give accreditation, and who would you be recognized by, your accrediting body?
You would be accredited by ACCS.
Why would colleges look at
ACCS
and say, okay, that's good.
Your argument is circular. You always get back to something that started with a human being. Okay? You always keep going back. Every accrediting organization, as far as education goes, has a human origin. It just so happens that you're in the early stages of it. You may not like the people that have that authority. I'm being facetious with you. But the point is, well, what if it were, the church, or what if it were the civil government? What does that do? It still doesn't
really
do anything.
Would it be recognized by?
I think the credibility of the accreditation process has to do with standards.
Yes.
And those standards can be clearly identified and communicated to the colleges, even to the point, perhaps. Of interacting with colleges, and we might start calling it Christian colleges to do this, but interacting with colleges and say, you know, if we were really able to successfully guarantee to you that school X maintained the standards, would you take that as an
what were the standards that you would want us to maintain?
Or are the standards too low?
Yeah. In other words, who is it that we want to who is it that we want to recognize it? So in a sense, they become part of the process. Now we still have integrity in the process. If they answer the question in such a way that, well, we really want to see your drinking fountains at 36 inches and no higher. Well, I mean, come on.
If you're worried about colleges still, maybe hearing it from another school, the same thing you've heard already from Idaho, colleges do not care about accreditation from anybody.
But see, unfortunately, we are in the Seattle area where we have a couple of colleges that do care. And they're well known and well respected.
Okay, we'll put it in our context. We're in Topeka, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
We've had kids now enroll at Columbia, at Harvard, at Wheaton, at Furman, at Kansas State, at Washburn, Southwest Baptist. But the University of Kansas, several years ago, said no students that aren't from an accredited school. Now, they wouldn't have accepted ACSI or AACS or
It was state only.
And so there was the one school that would not accept a private school student. They said, you have to take the GED.
Okay.
Well, okay, you take the GED, and then you enroll at the University of Kansas. Mm-hmm. Then they said, well, this is kind of silly. If you get a 24 or is it 25 on the ACT, then you can enroll at the University of Kansas. Well, our average is 26. And so that didn't prove to be a problem. Then finally, after seeing our kids, no one from our school, it's kind of an embarrassment, will apply to the University of Kansas. They'll go everywhere else. So finally, the Faculty Senate said, this is kind of stupid. Let's forget this requirement. And they've given it up, too. You can't change an individual college. You can't change Seattle Pacific University. You may have to boycott them for a while and send your kids everywhere else. But this is not a problem with 99% of the colleges.
It becomes such an issue with parents.
But as it relates to parents, and you're talking now from a marketing standpoint. I think the best answer, I clearly agree with you, and you have a lot more experience. You're way ahead in terms of experience than I am. But one of the things is go to Seattle Pacific and ask them. Okay, we don't want to be a maverick as far as you're concerned. Tell us how we can satisfy you within these constraints. Now, here's what we've got. Now, what can we do to satisfy you? And they might give you a list of things like was just mentioned.
Arnold, I'd just like to comment on that. You know, we just finished hearing from Doug talking about how, you know, the decline's already well past the start phase. And wouldn't it have been nice if more of us had recognized earlier so we wouldn't be in that situation, you know, today? And I look at the formation of ACCS or any other entity that wants to strive to be a recognized accrediting agency, if you will, as the first step so that 20 years from now, when your sons and daughters are starting their schools or doing something of that nature, there will be a recognized accrediting agency to go to.
Yeah. I think that's an important point. I mean, you look at the New England schools that we call the Ivy League, but when you read in Jonathan Edwards' day, I mean, there were 8 students in a class and things like that. It's just completely different than what we envision them. We don't realize that they were ever like that. Yeah, behind you then.
I think we're missing the point to some degree for the purpose of ACCS. It's not so that we can get our kids into college. It's an accountability organization so that we as schools, as members of ACCS, can be accountable to each other and accountable to the standards that we want to set for ourselves.
Yes.
And that's what we need to hold high.
Right.
If we do that, no college will eventually want to turn our kids away because we'll have this great standards that they won't want to turn our kids away.
I agree with you, and that's a very valid long-term way of looking at things. However, to the extent that we can easily, practically, without compromise, meet someone else's standard, why not? I mean, I'm not the least bit interested in calling a plumber in to lower the height of my drinking fountains so as to meet an accreditation. But if it's a $50 item, you know, big deal.
I guess my point is that the purpose of the ACCS, to be a member of the ACCS, is not just to get kids into college.
No, of course not. Yeah. But what we're dealing with is one particular aspect, and that is ACCS thinks it's a good idea for accreditation, not for college necessarily, although that's a marketing question that we address with parents, but in order to establish a quality control for all of us. Yes. Ed?
Just something real quick to add to this, especially with our friend from Topeka. The retired dean emeritus of education of Washington State University told me that publicly colleges and universities will not say that they like seeing homeschoolers and private school kids, especially Christian private school kids, coming to their universities. Publicly, they won't say it. Privately, they love seeing them come because they are smart kids and they are not troublemakers, and that combination works to raise the overall standard at that school, and that overall standard is how those presidents of universities line their pockets. So they love, they may make it through a hoop of taking some entrance examination of some kind. But they love to see it coming. They love it.
Quality product, and what do you get out of it, right?
Yeah.
You get the benefit.
Clay.
I was just going to make a comment to the lady from Seattle. I was asking the Carafabel Latin School people who've been in business, really, does that screen out some parents that you don't want? And I know that's a hard thing to say, but if that's their number one criteria.
Well, I don't think it's enough. See, I don't know if we're just philosophically a little different on this, but I don't want to throw up any barriers that I don't need to.
Right.
You know, that's just the
way. I think that's a biblical perspective. However, at some point, if the person continues to persist on it, I think that Clay's got a good point, just saying, look, you're holding that in a lot more importance than we think it ought to be. Maybe this isn't the right place for you. And that's a way of calling the question, so to speak, because I can tell you one thing. Parents will talk to you about anything and everything as long as you will let them. And if you're in a small enough town, they'll catch you at the grocery store, at the drug store, when you're getting gas, when you're going to bed. I mean, they will catch you at all times. And you will quickly learn that an answering machine is a wonderful way of controlling your life. Hold on just a second. He's had his hand up.
First thing out, kind of along the same lines, I actually have to give credit for this. The three of the schools that are in this organization from Texas had a lady come over from England and talk to us a few months ago, Eve Anderson. She's been involved in Charlotte Mason schools forever and ever. You probably have heard some of that. But she talked about the issue of dealing with people who are negative about things at the school. I think it applies to people who are sort of majoring on the minors.
Yes.
And she just said her practice is to smile very sweetly out at them and say, is there anything we're doing right? Because for me to keep doing it right, I need to keep hearing that. I need to be able to
right.
be encouraged and encourage my students. And by the, on the other hand, if I'm not doing anything right, then
what are you doing?
This is going to solve your problem.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point.
All I can say is that you just need to take a deep breath and go, because after you have two graduating classes, whether they be two students in each class or whatever, that question is not going to come up.
You never hear it again.
You never hear it again. So you're just going to have to live through it. But also, something we did is we just made a little position paper and said, this is our school, this is what we require, and show them that our standards are quite a bit above the public schools and what our average ACT scores and things like that, and sent that out with each transcript each time.
Yeah.
And so that might be an idea to
Let's end on that. That's an excellent point. We've focused for the last 10 minutes on the issue of accreditation, which is one of many questions and many issues that you'll hear about as parents consider sending their children to your school. It is a very significant thing to deal with objections before you hear them. Now, you may hear them for one time from somebody. You may hear them a second time. Let's get smart at that point and say, we're going to hear those again. Let's be prepared to address them. So in a public meeting, before you get to a Q&A time, you say, here are the kinds of questions that people have, and here are the answers we've got. And strategically, you have done a very wise thing in allaying the fears of someone before they've expressed them. And it is a wonderful way to build strength.